John Harris, Texans analyst here, joining us here from down in Houston. And John, welcome to the show, man. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time.
Yeah, no problem, man. It's my pleasure. Just to show you kind of how things are in Houston. You know, obviously we had Hurricane Harvey, which was disastrous. But people here know how to deal with hurricanes. People have no idea how to deal with ice and snow.
Yeah.
Even my Starbucks is closed.
Like, no!
Like, what are you doing? I mean, it's like, I mean, come on, man. It's like, you got to be open. You're the only place that should be open right now. It's ridiculous.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, which I'm sure it doesn't, nobody in this city knows how to drive in the snow either. So,
yeah, this place, it's kind of funny to watch the news because I'm from Wisconsin. I moved here when I was 11, and then I went to Brown University. So I've seen snow. I've seen ice. I lived in North Carolina for a while, so I've seen a little bit of it. Man, I've come here. These people have no idea. When snow falls, I mean, it's like a second Christmas. It's ridiculous.
Let's just talk about State Street then, because I'm from Madison originally. So let's just talk about Wisconsin for a segment here. I think Nashville, that's all they want to hear about. We'll just talk about the Badger State. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure. My office mate is from Wisconsin, and he's one of our social media guys. And, I mean, he's always wearing red and loves Madison. I mean, so it's good. Wisconsin, of course, you know, Wisconsin's been good to the city of Houston with a guy named J.J. Watt.
That's true. That's true. So let's get into the coaching staff and the guy who coaches J.J. Watt and all the other linebackers and now the defense is Mike Vrabel, and clearly a guy that, by all reports, will be interviewed by John Robinson, the Titans general manager, for the head coaching position here in Nashville. So but every report and all the interviews and all the stories you read about Mike Vrabel is this guy is a commanding presence in a room and sort of knows how to command the room and is a great leader. Sort of give us your breakdown of his before we get to what he would be schematically, give us a breakdown of his personality. Are all those reports basically true, essentially?
Well, he's the worst. You guys don't want any part of him in Nashville. I mean, he's the worst coach ever. You don't want any part of him. Just let him stay here in Houston, and we'll be friends. No, in all seriousness, we've all known, I think, in Houston that it's just a matter of time before Vrabel gets a job somewhere, a head coaching job. I mean, we knew it from the first day he stepped in the building, because he does. He has that presence. I mean, first of all, just physically, you know, when he walks in a room, you can't help but take notice. I mean, he walks in, it's like, oh my goodness. I mean, he's still in great shape. He looks like he could still go out there and play. And then you watch him at practice. I think that's the one thing that I have appreciated more than anything else. And having coached many, many years ago, you know, I used to love games, but I love practice. I love teaching because it runs in my blood. And I just love to watch guys that are good at teaching the game and teaching technique. Now, Vrabel has his own unique way of doing it. But when I think about Mike, I think about Jadeveon Clowney, and I think about mainly Whitney Mercilus. Because, look, it was eventually going to come out of Clowney. But he just needed someone that could push him in a direction to say, look, this is how you do it. He was eventually going to get there because he's one of the freakiest athletes, freakiest football players I've ever seen. A guy like Whitney Mercilus was just raw clay. I mean, he was an athlete. He had rushed the passer out of Illinois. But in 2 years under Wade Phillips, you know, Wade's a great defensive coordinator, but I don't know that technique and teaching how to use hands and playing off blocks and those kind of things are his. I don't think that's the way he does things exceptionally well. Mike, on the other hand, is different. He taught Whitney from day one, and I remember being at the very first OTA when Mike was, and I put in air quotes, teaching, coaching Whitney Mercilus, and he was just brutal on him. I mean, he was just brutal. He was like, Whit, no, hands here. And it was like, he wanted his hands like 3 inches from where they were. And before you knew it, Whitney Mercilus became one of the best technicians of using his pass rush moves. And he could do it up and down the line of scrimmage. And to me, that was the biggest loss. Look, J.J. Watt on the defense. I mean, losing J.J. Watt was huge. You know, but Christian Covington, D.J. Reader, I mean, he lost the entire defensive line. But to me, Whitney Mercilus was the one guy that could impact the passer at every single spot up and down the line of scrimmage. And that was in large part due to the work that Mike Vrabel put in to make Whitney Mercilus a pass rusher. And what it makes me think of in Nashville is Kevin Dodd. Is Kevin Dodd ever going to be the player that John Robinson thought he was going to be when he drafted him in the second round? Well, a guy like Mike Vrabel can pull that out of him. Now, the question for Mike is, can he do it for an entire team? Is that something he's structured to do? Because he's been on the defensive side as a player. Then he jumped in the defensive side as a coach at linebacker. Then he jumped in as the defensive coordinator this year. Does he have enough to work the entire team? I think he does. I just hope it's not in Nashville. No offense, guys. I just hope it's somewhere else where we don't have to face him twice a year, because he's eventually going to be a really good head coach because he's a really good teacher and he communicates very well. Now, he might – what's the right way of saying this? He might push your buttons a little bit, but he's going to get the best out of you. And if he can do that for an entire team, that team's going to win the Super Bowl someday.
Well, I think you're hitting on the very thing that John Robinson – banged on repeatedly at his press conference Monday, and that was maximizing the skill sets of players, and it sounds like that's exactly what you're saying Mike Vrabel is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question in that. Now, there are a lot of people that look at this year on the Texans' defensive side of the ball and say, well, hey, proof's in the pudding. He must not be a very good coach. Look at that defense. Well, I would remind you, by game five, there was no Watt. There was no Merciless. In game seven, we lost Christian Covington, who's an underrated pass rusher. We lost DJ Reader along the way. He's dealing with a rookie linebacker, albeit very good, in Zach Cunningham. And there's another one, if you want it. And you guys know all about Zach being right there in Nashville. You know what kind of football player he is. Zach Cunningham became a complete football player, I think, with the help of Mike Vrabel. And it was the same thing. The first day of training camp, he is all over Cunningham. And it paid off. So, you know, the defense, now the secondary, the secondary was just not good this year in Houston. I think age caught up to it. I think there were a couple of injuries that hurt. So I don't know that I put a ton of stock in what Vrabel did as a defensive coordinator this year. I just think as a leader of men, and I know that was said about Vance Joseph last year with the Denver Broncos, but I think with Mike having been a player, having won rings, and then the unified front, I guess, you get with a coach alignment, I guess is the word we're using now, with coach and GM. I think that's hugely important in the NFL now. And I think where you see teams that are struggling, you don't have that. And now you have it in Houston with Brian Gain and Bill O'Brien. John Robinson having been with the Patriots and Mike Vrabel. I mean, the alignment is there. And I know that bothers some people. Oh, it's a good old boys club. He's hiring a friend. No, it's not really that. But what you have to do as a coach, and I've been caught in this situation, you have to have somebody you trust. If you have somebody you trust, then I think you can be all in playing for the logo. If you're not, then what you're doing is you're trying to work your way into the power position. But when you have alignment, you're not really worried about that. You're worried about where the team can go. Now, maximizing the performance of players is key, but it all starts at number eight and getting more out of Marcus every single week. Now, that's going to be Mike's charge, but it's also going to be who would he hire to be his offensive coordinator. So I think Mike being the first step, but then who would Mike bring in as his offensive coordinator to get the most out of Marcus going forward? To me, that's going to be the biggest question in Nashville, I think, beyond who ends up being the head coach.
John Harris, real quickly, John Harris joining us here from the Houston Texans down there analyzing things. And real quickly before we go to break, what would he bring to the table? And would Bill, you talked about alignment in the organization. Is there alignment with Bill O'Brien, or would he ever leave?
I think there is now. I think that, look, it's been much talked about with Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien. I just think it was, it was peanut butter and mayonnaise, so to speak. And I don't think it was the right fit. But I think when Rick stepped away, I think the GM that walked in, Brian Gain, was a guy that Bill's very comfortable with. So I do think there is alignment here. Now, we'll see whether it works. But I think in a lot of Patriots guys' minds, and you know what I'm talking about, that's what they saw with Belichick. Belichick Pioli, Belichick Casario. They saw the alignment and they saw it work. And so that's a big thing for them. And I think that's what Vrabel would want. And I think if he went to Nashville, obviously he would get that. So I think that's a big thing for him. It's a big thing for O'Brien. He got in Houston. We'll see what happens in Nashville.
John, always a pleasure, man. Thanks a lot for giving us a few minutes of your time. Be safe down there driving around and getting some coffee, all right?
Absolutely, guys. Take care.
John Harris, Texans football analyst. Let's dive into that a little bit, Corey, when we come back, a little bit on Mike Vrabel. And another question, because all we've talked about today, assistant coaches. Are there head coaching experience guys out there that we would be fine with, or is that not the direction the Titans should go? We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis joining us here. Braden Gall, sports director, News 2, Julian Council producing. My name is Braden Gall. We'll talk with Willie Donick and talk a little Preds here as we break up this Titans coaching caravan that's going to be taking over the airwaves here on 102.5 until they make a hire, which I'm of the opinion that it might actually be quicker than people think.
Yeah, well, you were talking about that because the thing is the Senior Bowl is next week.
Right.
And I said, well, who goes down there? Is it just J-Rob and his scouts, or are they going to have any assistants?
I would not be surprised if a head coach has been named and is able to go down to that list or down to that event because
they haven't interviewed anybody yet.
Because I don't believe that Josh McDaniels, Pat Shurmur, or Matt Patricia are in play here, and I don't think that John DeFilippo is ready to be the head coach, but could absolutely be an offensive coordinator, which would be a raise and a promotion for him if he was packaged with one of these sort of guys that we trust on defense, which as of right now we know Steve Wilks, the defensive coordinator for Carolina, and Mike Vrabel, the defensive coordinator for the Texans, will be interviewed by John Robinson at some point. It may have happened yesterday or today. We're not sure.
Well, the Titans said they said they would announce it, and they say
a lot of things.
Well, they've done it in the past, and that's why I keep them at their word on that. Now, you've said that Wilks is connected to DeFilippo as an OC.
That's been rumored.
Yes,
that could be a
package
deal.
Are there any rumors of a package deal for Vrabel on who he would bring?
I have not seen any, and nobody, again, no sources here or anything. No one's told me that. I have not heard that. But if you told me Vrabel head coach, Jim Bob Cooter, offensive coordinator, I would feel pretty good about
that. But there's been nothing tying any of these guys to him.
If you told me Vrabel and Matt LaFleur as the offensive coordinator, I would feel pretty good about that. If you told me Vrabel head coach, DeFilippo, offensive coordinator, I would feel pretty good about that as well.
What do you think about Sean Ryan, the quarterback's coach in Houston?
See, my issue with Bill O'Brien and that offensive coaching staff, including him, is while they have won divisions with nothing at quarterback, and clearly Tom Savage has gotten better.
When they had Watson, they were pretty good.
That, to me, is Watson, though.
Yeah.
That, to me, is Deshaun Watson doing that, not the coaching staff,
okay.
which again, is sort of parsing out really fine lines there. I get that. But to me, that offense went from awful to great because of one thing, and his name is Deshaun. That to me is what took place. I think Bill O'Brien is a very good football coach, but I think that he needed when the rock star showed up at quarterback and they traded up to get him.
Wait a minute,
offense skyrocketed.
You're saying an NFL head coach needed a good
yes.
quarterback to win?
Shocking.
I've never heard of that scenario going down before.
Shocking turn of events. I'm going out on a limb and making that statement. Now, the other question though that has not really come up much because it doesn't appear that this is the direction John Robinson is going. Is either former head football coaches in the NFL, the old retread, whether they had lots of success, minimal success, or middle of the pack success. The list of those names is long. Jim Schwartz, Hugh Jackson, Scott Linehan, Jack Del Rio, Greg Schiano, John Fox, Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians would be at the top of that list for me with a bullet. College football head coaches. How important to you, Corey, is head coaching experience in this process?
It's not because like I've always said, if you're the guy, you're the guy. And if you're the guy and you've got head coaching experience, even better. But, you know, somebody's got to give you your first chance. Bill Cowher wasn't a head coach before he took over the Steelers. Mike Ditka wasn't a head coach before he took over the Bears. Andy Reid wasn't a head coach before he took over and won a ton of games. John Harbaugh wasn't a head coach before he took over the Ravens. I mean, there's
three of the four coaches in the playoff in college football this year were first time.
Yeah.
I mean, Dabo Sweeney, Kirby Smart, and Lincoln Riley all were coordinators who took head coaching jobs.
So, I mean, you got to get your first shot somewhere, and that's where it's on management to make good choices. You have to be able to read people. You have to be able to, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask John Harris about, Vrabel's got a reputation as a great big picture guy. And that's important in this job.
John Robinson said, leader of men.
Yeah.
That was one of his top priorities. Now, are there any other names out? Because we both agree Bruce Arians is sort of the top of that quote-unquote retread list. Is there another name on that list as far as former NFL head coaches that would interest you? So no. I'm with you. There's not. I'm with you.
Do I think Jim Schwartz can win in the league? Yeah. If he's got a rock star OC with him,
yeah.
I think he can.
Yeah.
Do I think he could work with John Robinson? Probably. Jim's pretty headstrong.
Yeah.
And he should be. I mean, he's had a lot of success in this league.
What about college head coaches? Now, I think the Nick Sabans, Jim Harbaughs Urban Meyers. I don't think any of them are interested in leaving their current locations.
So PK Fleck.
PJ Fleck.
PK.
PK.
He's got to use PK if he's going to be.
David Shaw at Stanford would be one of my first phone calls if I'm John Robinson. Also, that's his alma mater. I don't know if he would ever leave. But I think David Shaw has the personality type to mesh with Nashville, because Chris Peterson, I think, is a great football coach at Washington, but is more of a disciplinarian type. Jim Harbaugh, same type. I'm not sure that works in the NFL.
Well, it depends on whether his wife likes Nashville more than Palo Alto.
That's
a tough sell.
Palo Alto's pretty nice.
California, Palo Alto, really, really hard to beat.
Mark D'Antonio's an interesting one at Michigan State. Bob Stoops is sitting out there. And Gus Malzahn, I've heard his name tossed around as well. If you want
Ed Orgeron.
Stop it. If you want to be offensively innovative, Gus Malzahn. But I don't like – David Shaw's the only one. Brian Kelly also, from a personality standpoint, I think would rub people all the wrong way. He's an abrasive guy along the lines of Saban and Harbaugh. D'Antonio and Peterson and Shaw are interesting to me. All of those guys are defensive guys.
Well, and a guy I would have liked – or been interested in, I should say. Liked isn't the right word. Interested in, just took a job, and that would have been Dan Mullen.
Also a tricky guy to, you know.
But he's an offensive
guy.
To
be around, but he would absolutely develop a quarterback.
Yeah,
there's no question about that.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, he's.
There's no question about
now,
that.
Now, if you're the head coach, here's what
he knows more about football than anybody, and he will tell you about it.
We've talked about this a little bit. You know, as the head coach, you know, how much can you do as far as individual player development? Because if you're the head coach, you're not working hands-on with the quarterback every day. You've got a lot of other stuff to do. So you've still got to hire good people who can implement your vision.
So, for example, Dabo Swinney doesn't qualify to me as somebody. He needs great coordinators. He's a great CEO and a great recruiter, and I think he fits perfectly in college. But if you want to really rock the boat and go young and go offensive and really change everything, you go get Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma. You go get a guy who has the credentials on offense as good as anybody in all of college football right now. Just won his quarterback a Heisman Trophy, or helped Baker Mayfield win a Heisman Trophy. Got his team to the playoff in his first year, and is largely charged with reinvigorating the Oklahoma Sooners offense. That is at 34 years old. He's older than Jim Bob Cooter, who's 33.
That's crazy.
Lincoln, he's the same age as Sean McVay. That would be the splashy, let's go for it all, risky, very risky hire that makes everybody excited about what the offense would look like. And he is clearly a brilliant offensive mind.
Yeah, and his stock couldn't get much higher than it is right now.
Because, you could sell it right now.
And he's 1 year in, and I know in the college circles his stock was already pretty high, but now his stock is sky high.
Yes.
He
loves running the football, too. It's not just a passing offense. So he's an interesting one.
And, you know, really, with this Titans fan base, and listen, I don't think selling a coach to the fan is your number one, two, three, four, five, or six concern. I think with the way the stands have looked the last few years, that definitely weighed into part of their decision-making.
Sure.
And I think it's going to weigh into part of their decision-making with the head coach. And I think outside of – like, if they hired John Fox, I think that would be incredibly unpopular.
Yes.
But if they hired, like, a Lincoln Riley.
It gets people, it makes everybody feel good.
Yeah, well, everybody's
like, ooh,
he's young,
this is cool.
Innovator. Yeah, it's like a fancy new toy. You don't know.
Winning the press conference is not what you want to do. That's not the point of making
a hire. No, you've got to, you could sell seats for the first four games of the season, but at the end of the day, you got to win.
Got to win.
Got to win.
No question about it. If you want to win Nashville, how about some free stuff?
I like free stuff.
Free stuff. You can win right now. Call 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5. We'll get a pair of tickets to the Blue Raiders UTSA basketball game at the Murphy Center on Thursday, January 25th. Be sure to catch all the coverage of MTSU and Marshall tomorrow on 94.9 Game 2 with tip-off at 7 p.m. They got Western Kentucky on Saturday. Should be a big week for Nashville basketball. Caller number 5 right now, 615-737-1025. We'll get a couple of tickets to MTSU basketball game on Thursday, January 25th. When we come back, let's get into some hockey talk. Let's put this Titans thing to rest for just a couple of minutes here, and let's talk a little hockey here as the Preds get a big W last night over the Vegas Knights, but not the biggest story of the game. We'll explain that when we come back right here. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall, ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game is your flagship station for the reigning Western Conference champions, the Nashville Predators. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and like us on Facebook to keep up with all things in Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game, Instagram at The Game Nashville, Facebook.com/The Game Nashville. Lots of things to get to with the Predators as we're finally back on the ice. Last night, 1-0 win over Vegas in a very, very difficult playoff-ish performance between the two teams. It had a lot of intensity, sort of a slow start for the Preds there, a 0-0 game.
Ryan Johansson had some stiff words before the game.
Yes, he did.
We're coming for you.
And they took it out on him, unfortunately, in a very scary way, and we'll get to that in a second. But a lot of storylines for, you know, game 43 of the season, a lot of storylines to come out of that game. First, Peter Laviolette had an opportunity after the game to address one of the biggest storylines. And the first star of the game last night, UC Saros, shutting out the Vegas Knights. That's now two shutouts for him in which he saved more than 40 shots. He was absolutely electric last night. The reason he played, of course, a very interesting answer from Peter Laviolette. This is the head coach of the Predators talking about his goaltender and why Juuse got the start last night over Pekka Rinne.
You know, there's a couple points to it, probably. One is that he is getting work so that he stays sharp when he does get the call up here. He's taking pucks in live action. And the second part of it is we want him to continue to develop, want him to continue to play games. If you're sitting and only playing 15 games a year, it's probably not great for your development. So we've just tried to look at the schedule and make the decisions on when it might be best for him to get down and get some playing time. I think, you know, it's worked really well because, for this instance to keep him playing during the break, and he played extremely well down there. We got a goaltender that's been taking shots for the week in live action, and he comes back tonight and he plays terrific.
There's Lavi talking about why he ran Juuse out there instead of Pekka Rinne. It's weird to hear, oh, Pekka Rinne needs a couple days to get back into the swing of things because he's been off for 5 days. You'd think he'd be rested, but it's because they don't practice and they're not actually allowed to do anything during that five-day stretch that Juuse was down in Milwaukee playing, facing live action, and played extremely good hockey last night.
Yeah, I mean, he was the Saros that we saw a lot of last year and we expected to see this year. And if you're the Predators moving forward, this is what you need to see, especially when you hear the words about development. You know, with Carter Hutton, they always liked Carter Hutton, but they never talked about developing Carter Hutton for the future. There's definitely a long-term plan in place for UC Saros. And if you didn't think so before, just listen to that soundbite and tell me there isn't.
I think when you look at his age, his talent, and his resume, I think he is the succession plan to Pekka Rinne. The question is, when is that going to happen? Yeah. Does that happen when Pekka Rinne's contract runs out at the end of next season? Or is there a bridge contract there for Pekka Rinne in some capacity? Is there more of a split 50-50 maybe down the road? All of that is for very smart hockey people that work inside that building to decide, not for us to decide. But right now, you're going to ride or die in the postseason with Pekka Rinne. UC Saros will be the future at some point. So you love seeing the sort of performances you've seen from him over the last month and a half. He got a little rough start there, but he has been very, very good when called upon in recent weeks and months. The other big news, of course, Victor Arvidsson placed on IR yesterday morning. After an injury Monday during practice, he did try to give it a go yesterday. They said, no, not going to work. We'll place you on IR, which is a 7-day since your last game, which would have been a week ago last Tuesday. So he will be eligible to play on Thursday if he is healthy. So Victor Arvidsson watch. RV watch is now in full effect as he will be back. But really the biggest piece of news. And by the way, Philip Forsberg is still about 2.5, 3, 4 weeks away. We're at about 14 days to the date, I think, since the Forsberg timeline was announced by the Predators when they said 4 to 6 weeks with the reported alleged fractured hand. They are actually, I think, 4-1-1 since he left the lineup. So obviously he's not important at all.
No, trade him.
So that's sort of the timeline for those two players. Unfortunately, all of Jofa is now dealing with this as Ryan Johansson leaves last night's game with just a couple of minutes to go in the second period and takes a really scary and nasty hit to the head from Carrier, the Golden Knight player, and takes a shoulder to the jaw and is basically knocked out and had to leave the ice immediately. under his own power, which was good, but it certainly looked like he had some sort of head injury, concussion.
He did not return,
and he did not return to the game. So they won that game last night, 1-0, with nary a Jofa member on the ice in the third period.
It's like having the Academy Awards without Bennifer. I mean, I don't know how we got through it last night, but somehow we made it. And this is where the depth of this organization comes into play. We saw it last year during the Stanley Cup run, and we'll see how it stacks up this year. I mean, Freddie Goudreau was an important piece to that Stanley Cup puzzle, and he's been playing in Milwaukee. He's going to have to come up and play some now.
He played last night.
Yeah.
If you lose another one, I'm not sure where they go. I mean, you put McLeod into the lineup, I guess, at that point.
They just punch people.
But it's... to have all three guys out, if there is any extended period of time with those three guys, that's obviously very dangerous, and you're going to have to see the Kyle Turris-Smith-Fiala line step up. Now, they did last night. Fiala gets the game-winning goal, the only goal of the night, and sort of breaks his point drought there, gets his 11th of the season with a backside rebound and just a really excellent goal for him. But the Turris-Smith-Fiala line now has to become basically your top line, especially if Ryan Johansson is out for an extended period of time.
Well, and they've played like a top line, but when you're not the top line, you don't get the top defensive pairing quite so much. And so we'll see how they can go facing the number ones on the other side of the ice, you know, and where they're the line you got to stop. It'll be a bigger challenge for them. Those guys have all been around the league. I mean, Fiala, obviously not as long, but they've all got talent. But it's added pressure. But I think more so, Braden, I think it turns up the pressure on the defense. I mean, I think you got to look for the Preds to win some lower scoring games here in the next week.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see. Now, what I like about the schedule, obviously we've talked about this a lot of home games coming up. So that's a good positive sign for the Predators that you're going to be in friendly confines, at least for what I think 7 of the next 8. Now there are some really tough ones in there with Tampa Bay coming next Tuesday, of course. But if Johansson's only out for a week and Arvidsson only misses a game, you feel a lot better because you're playing Arizona tomorrow night, which puck drop at 7 o'clock, and then Florida, also not a good hockey team, on Saturday night. It doesn't mean you can, you know, lollygag your way to first, second, and third in those two games.
Lollygaggers.
Because that's what that would make you. But you can't do that. But if you're going to say, hey, you're without Jofa, when are you going to do that? You're going to be at home against Arizona and Florida. Those are the games to do it.
Yeah, and it's a nice time for Lavi to be able to say to his team, you know, we may be down, but we're going to get these points. You know, whereas if you had, you know, Washington and the Rangers and Winnipeg coming to town, you might be looking at this stretch going, well, we got three games. If we can somehow find a way to get 3 points out right. of it, we'll be okay. If you're Lavi, you've still got your foot to the gas, and you're saying, guys,
oh, you can win.
We're getting 2 points here, and we're getting 2 points here, and nothing less than that is acceptable.
And it will have to be more like last night, which was a defensive struggle. Now, yeah, they definitely came out slow in the first period after off the bye, which it seems to be the bye week. What I think I've decided, just personally, just because I want to, I think the bye week is a good thing long term for hockey teams, meaning the rest of the season.
In short term.
But in the short term, I'm not sure if it's a great thing for teams. Many teams have sort of come out slow, trying to regain whatever energy, focus, momentum, rhythm, whatever you want to call it, in the short term. So I think that you could tell in the first period it was a little sluggish, and I think things got a lot better as the game went along. But they're going to have to be games like that. They're going to have to be 1-0, 2-1 games against Arizona and Florida, because you're just not in that 5-3 realm anymore without your top two goal scorers from last year. Two 30-goal scorers are not playing right now. And your top centerman, who makes $8 million a year, who, by the way, I thought was playing a very good game last night off of the puck. I want to see more of that from him. Unfortunately, it ended the way it did last night for Johansson. Very scary.
And if you want to spin this positive, you're going to get some ice time for some guys who may not have gotten as much ice time as you wanted. And also, you know, one of the things that made the Predators so good last year in the postseason was their ability to play different style games. And so maybe this gives you that chance to implement and play a little bit more different style than you have been, where you've been going up and down the ice with people and just saying, yeah, we'll do this, let's go.
Well, it should be a very interesting week, and we'll wait to hear and find out news on Ryan Johansson. Of course, Victor Arvidsson watch is underway as well. He could be back as early as tomorrow, could also miss another game. Wouldn't be surprised if he missed at least another game, and maybe he's back Saturday, so we'll see. Forsberg watch, of course, is more like 2 or 3 weeks away for him. So,
Forsberg watch.
Jofa out for the entire third period. Still got 2 points last night. That was a pretty big deal for the Nashville Predators, as finally they're back after the break, and we can focus on the second half of the season and a push to the NHL playoffs now that the football season is over.
Yeah, I can't sleep again. Great.
I don't want to hear any complaining when you have to watch Predators games against Anaheim on the West Coast and then get up at 4:15 in the morning.
Well,
so I got you beat there, buddy.
I work late every night, and I've got an early riser at home. So
it's called parenting.
Yeah.
Willie Donick going to join us as well. He'll step in when we come back, and we'll talk. We'll continue this Preds discussion right here. You're listening to 102.5 live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Corey Curtis, thank you so much for hanging out today, my friend.
I've heard of him. That guy's awesome.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah?
Mediocre at best, actually.
Well, I was going to say, you're probably asleep.
At Corey Curtis, too. At Corey Curtis, too. You can follow him there on Twitter. News 2 Sports Director Braden Gall here. And Willie Donick joining us in studio. Of course, 3D coming up next here at the top of the hour. Preds last night, we've got a lot of stories for the 43rd game of the season, Willie. It felt like there was a lot to discuss in one game. Something we did not mention last segment that I want to bring in because I want to make it all positive first before we bring it all down, Willie. And that is the play Austin Watson made with the blade of his stick and then the blade of his skate to keep the puck out of the net. What I think it was like early second period, maybe somewhere in there. I can't remember exactly when it was, but if you didn't see the play, go check out the footage there on the YouTubes and the social medias, because that's as instinctual and as awesome an Austin Watson play as I've seen all season.
Great play. And Austin Watson seems to have that great energy factor, that desire that makes him what he is. I mean, he's a first-round pick that has not progressed into a top-six player that you always hope your first-rounder does, but he's made himself into a guy that's going to play in this league for a long time because he's useful. He can score an occasional goal for you, but he plays with the grit, and he does little things like that. Diving blocks, does anything he can to get the puck out of the net.
Great penalty killer.
Not too proud. I mean, a lot of guys would be like a first-round pick would be too proud to try to, I don't want to say dumb down their game, but, I mean, to just be, I mean, he is a grit guy, a core guy, does the dirty things guy. He never got too big for himself. He was going to do what it took for him to, number one, achieve at the NHL level, and number two, help his team win. And when you make plays like that, you are helping your team win.
He changed his game.
And remember, he did not make the opening day roster last year. He was waived at the beginning of the season. Anybody could have picked him up. And that was a wake-up call for him. He started the year in Milwaukee, came up early in the season, and he seemed to be at another level. And he just made himself useful, and now he's a guy you wouldn't want out of the lineup.
Can we go with Toothless Wonder from now on?
Yeah, the Toothless Wonder.
Can we call him that from now on?
Yeah, another Chris Mason special there.
Do you think that'll stick? I think we should. I don't know if he'd appreciate that or not, because he clearly obviously doesn't want to wear the new he doesn't wear the teeth on purpose. Like he wears it like a badge of honor.
You just get him knocked out again. So I mean,
you might as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get to the hit then, because I don't. Carrier hits Johansson near the end of the second period, knocks him out very clearly. Even Peter Laviolette is not going to sell us on what this upper body injury is, because even Peter Laviolette was yelling at the officials. He hit him in the bleeping head, and it's very clear that he got hit in the head. So we know that this is some sort of head injury for Ryan Johansson.
Upper body.
A very scary hit. In general, Willie, what is the protocol for that type of hit? There's obviously no way to know how serious it was for him. But what's sort of the protocol and the next steps in line for Ryan Johansson going through this, what I'm assuming is concussion protocol?
Well, you can see how quickly he was dazed by the hit. The contact directly to the head, maybe the jaw. You always see that. You think about quarterbacks who get hit in that jaw area. It's always very startling right away. And he just went down in a heap. Big guy, and he wasn't really in control of his body as he fell to the ice. So there was contact to the head. It's really hard when you ask around to different people. Like during the intermission, obviously all the media from both sides, we went to the other announcers, what'd you guys think? They came to us, hey, what do you think? You know, you want to be careful before you just go out and be that guy that's yelling and screaming, that's an egregious hit to the head. The league's got to look at that. All of that stuff. The league always tells you, listen, we're watching all the hits. There's no need for you to say
right.
The league's going to look at that. League looks at everything. The question is, do they have enough angles to tell whether it was a clear shot directly to the head? I don't think Carrier was leaving his feet, launching into the head. And Ryan Johansson, it was a weird play. James Neal was in the neutral zone. Johansson was coming over there. All of a sudden, the puck was in Johansson's skate. So he's got to look down to play it. He plays the puck so he was eligible to be hit. He had his head down. He was, you know, it's not like the puck was gone and he's not expecting to get hit. He knows he's got to be prepared to get hit there. But I do think the first contact was to the head. I really do. Sometimes looks like the head, and it's actually the shoulder to shoulder, and then the head snaps back.
He came in high. I mean,
he could have gone lower. He could have gone lower.
I think so.
Joey's 6'3", right?
Yeah.
I mean, to hit him in the head, you've got to be coming in high. You've got to adjust your strike zone, just like in the National Football League. And I think he needs to be held responsible. He may not have meant to hit him in the head, but if he didn't mean to hit him in the head, then he was just irresponsible. And it still put a guy in a position where he took a brain injury. And you can't just say, oh, that's the game. This is serious stuff, and it has to be addressed that way.
I agree. I think there has to just be simply responsibility when you hit a guy in the head.
You're responsible for your stick.
Right. It's the same thing with your stick. You didn't mean to hit him with your stick, but you got him, so it's a penalty.
That's where I fall when I watched it, is that it wasn't intentional. Like you see with targeting so much, when the receiver dips to catch the pass, to brace for impact, it's not intentional, it's not malicious, but if it is your body who makes that hit, you are responsible for it.
And I understand the officials. It's hard in real time to see where the contact occurs. So the question is, what happens today? I have thrown up my hands, and I never know what they're going to do in that league office. Sometimes I'm 100% sure there's going to be supplemental discipline for that. And nobody says, there's no word from anybody, nothing. And so I don't get my hopes up anymore. Not that I want anybody to be punished, but I do think that was a hit to the head. It wasn't intentional.
Right.
They missed it on the ice. There's nothing you can do. I can see how you would miss it.
And the penalty doesn't really help you at all in this situation.
Right. I mean, Vegas, to their point, you know, their announcers were saying, well, Alexi Emelin knocked a guy out for the Vegas Golden Knights early in the first period. That guy didn't return, Thomas Nosek. And that was an interference penalty where a guy was not eligible to get hit. Got him up high, and he did not return.
Bad penalty there by Alexi.
Right. But so
it being a penalty, right?
But we're not making a big, jumping around and saying, that play? You know?
You're right. That's absolutely true. All right, let's finish on a positive note, because obviously Jofa misses the entire third period together. We're on RV watch for the next couple of games. We're on Forsberg watch for the next couple of weeks, and obviously we'll await word on Ryan Johansson. But one thing last night that was spectacular, and that is the goaltending. UC Saros was excellent last night, and I think, Corey, you made the point last segment. This is very clearly a development plan for UC Saros, not a, hey, you're going to be a backup for a couple of years, and then we're going to ship you off somewhere. This is a guy that they intend to have long term, and he showed us why last night.
Well, 2 years ago, when he first got to Milwaukee, his nickname was the future. They have always looked at him as a guy that, hey, this guy can be a starter someday. He's still very young in the process, but he's showing me that this is why nobody internally panicked at all when he started off 0-3. They knew he was better than that. They knew there was some misfortune there. But now, man, it's incredible. He's locked in. And what a gutsy decision. That went against the grain, but when you think about it, it made a lot of sense. They sent him to Milwaukee. He's already playing well. He stays in that groove. And they say, hey, we're playing the best team in the Western Conference, but let's use UC Saros. Now, on the surface, you're thinking, oh, come on, man. Why would you not come back with your number one? And everybody was asking that question. But when you really think about it, it worked very well. 15 shots in the first period. If he hadn't played in a week, or any goalie played in a week, does he keep him off the board? That's a really good question.
And credit the defense, too. They weren't high leverage, difficult chances as well. He saw the puck very well.
Right.
The defense played well. I think you actually said it a couple of times on the broadcast. You're like, well, it's counterintuitive a little bit, but Pekka-Rinne needs some time to get back into the flow of things, which is weird after a 5-day break, but you literally don't have any activity.
Yeah, you're not allowed to practice.
So UC took a bunch of live fire and was right in rhythm, so that's why it worked out.
They could play Slapshot Regatta, though.
Yeah. But, played. You know, and of course, if UC Saros had given up four last night, everybody said, well, why didn't you, you know.
It's the NHL, man. That's what happens in hockey. It's just back and forth. It's night to night, not in the NFL where it's week to week. Willie Donick, of course, on 3D coming up next here on 102.5. Thanks a lot. We appreciate your time, man.
All right, guys. Thanks. Stay warm.
Corey, you didn't suck, man.
Thanks, man.
You weren't bad.
Did I?
You weren't bad.
Was I okay today?
You were good.
Can I come back another time?
You can.
You haven't sucked yet, so you may
not
return.
Not one time.
You know what?
Not one time have you sucked.
You know, they haven't found anybody they liked yet, though, because you're still here by yourself. Either
all
that
right,
or nobody,
right.
or nobody
bail
likes
early
you.
That one time, so kind of upset about
that. You did leave me early,
that.
So that's three demerits.
I didn't leave you early. I went somewhere else early.
Right.
Family's overrated. For Julian Council and for intern Calvin, special thanks to Corey Curtis, News 2 Sports
My
Director.
Pleasure.
Thanks for coming in, man.
Yep.
My name's Braden Gall. Thanks for listening, everybody. 3D coming up next right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.